Okay, and we're back. So, continuing on with the chart, we are now getting to industrial incentives. And so, we have a list of industries on the side, and then we have monetary incentive and command and control gain. So, there's a couple different incentives that this tyranny virus has laid bare. One, of course, is the monetary incentive. Now, this is the monetary incentive as regards our market-driven economy is very, very, very strong. That's the sort of thing that has allowed the incredible, bountiful nature of our economy that the monetary incentive for having access, let's say, to all sorts of different food in the grocery store has allowed for the grocery store to, you know, come to what it is and what we have today, which is something absolutely incredible that 150 years ago would make a Russian king green with envy just walking into the corner store here in the States. So the monetary incentive that we have in our system is incredibly powerful. And the ways it's been used and abused by the organizations and corrupt actors for this virus panic is very indicative of an abuse of that monetary incentive in order to create the outcomes that they're looking to create. And you can see direct ways in which that was used to inflate numbers and to cause all sorts of havoc in the hospital industry and in nursing homes and that sort of thing. That was actually recently brought up by Dr. Malone on Joe Rogan's podcast. And of course, he's been talking about this, and many others have been talking about this since the beginning, that there was a certain amount of money that was directly paid out to the hospital when they gave someone a COVID positive indication that they were counted as a case, so to speak, and also that if they were admitted for that, as with that as a reason, there was thousands of dollars directly paid out, and if they were put on a ventilator, there's something like the numbers that that I heard back in 2020 were 13,000. For each person admitted for the virus, and 45,000 that was paid out directly for putting someone on a ventilator. And when you realize that putting someone on a ventilator ends up pretty much in 90% of cases leading to their death, you have a direct monetary incentive to start killing people, which is unfortunately, in some cases, it would appear that that went on, especially early on in New York and also in Canada. Sounds like they were doing that. Basically, in institutions in which they could keep the patients away from scrutiny by outside viewers, whether it's their family or it's some people who didn't have the pressures coming on them from the organization that they're involved with, i.e. the hospital, or whether there were nurses attached to the hospital or doctors attached to the hospital that had direct incentives for them to do these sorts of things. Those who didn't have those direct incentives and saw what was happening would clearly sound the alarm on this, and they did. And fortunately, that's been notable. But the monetary incentive to go along with this particular plan has been so incredible that's pretty much the main thing that has allowed it to go. Besides the groupthink, besides the fact that you have folks who were traditionally called leaders or thought leaders or something like that who would stand on the stage with their artificially inflated megaphones and just start lying to people. Besides that, the monetary incentive has been the big thing that's pushed this forward. And so the industries, the first one is pharmaceuticals, and there's a clear monetary motivation to go along. Vaccines, medicines, operations, and surgeries for a renewed nation of hypochondriacs. So the pharmaceutical industry has been a major pusher, clearly. And a corollary to that is the hospital system, as we've had it, administrators, that sort of thing, who are just, they're looking for money. So there you go. Where the money comes from, you're getting paid out through Medicare, Medicaid, whatever else for these diagnoses and for the so-called treatments that they're giving people. And you have a very direct manner that you can impose this virus tyranny on our society. And also there's a command and control gain for the pharmaceutical companies. And so the monetary incentive for them to go along with this is astronomical. And the command and control gain that they get with this is astronomical. Because if you put a panic upon the entire population based on this virus, and in such a manner, the only answer to a virus is some sort of cure or something in a hospital system. You're saying that by creating that panic, you're saying that the pharmaceutical companies and the hospital industry are the answer. So what's going to happen is the pharmaceutical companies and the hospital industry are going to have this huge command and control gain. Administrators in charge of a lot of that, the doctors who keep their positions in public policy, health policy, that sort of thing, they all stand to gain immeasurably, because there's going to be millions and millions of people who are going to go over to the hospitals and go to the pharmaceutical companies, and they're going to go to the heads of health departments, and they're going to say, oh, what do we do now? What do we do now? Tell us what to do. Tell us what to do now. Tell us what to do now. And thus, when you have millions of people who are begging to be told what to do by particular, you know, people in these industries, whether they're organizations, whether they're individuals, those organizations and individuals gain an immense amount of command and control power, because whatever they say, the people will do. That's a great incentive for the pharmaceutical companies, hospital industry, and that sort of thing. And big tech clearly benefits from reliance on their exclusive and controlled platforms, limitless in potential abuse, which we are already witnessing in many ways. They are a major pusher. So the monetary incentive for big tech is astronomical. Command and control gain for big tech is astronomical. And again, the monetary incentive on their part is that by forcing people all into isolation and making sure that the only way that they can really communicate with each other is through the big tech platforms, social media companies, and through Google phones and app stores and everything else, they make sure that the pipeline of money that goes with that communication all goes through them. So they gain a monopolistic, huge monopolistic monetary incentive by making sure that people don't have the outlet of, you know, walking over to their neighbor's house and knocking on their door and saying hi, and then, you know, talking about the whatever they want to talk about, as opposed to them going through Facebook to talk to their neighbor, or calling them on the phone to talk to their neighbor. And you also have the command and control gain on that front for big tech, by since them being the only real game in town, that you can do that communication, such as it stands, since they have the ability to, at least they've taken the ability to censor, shut down people, kick them off of their platforms, that sort of thing, the command and control gain for them is huge, because if you're only speaking through their platforms and they're the only game in town, then they have incredible power over huge, huge swaths of people. So there's that. So they're a major pusher on that front. And that was clear that this has been the case for a couple years now. C, chemicals. For cleaning, sterilizing agents, hand sanitizers, etc. For hypochondriatic panic. Direct beneficiaries of the panic, but not major pushers. So it would seem, the monetary incentive for pushing the panic on the for those in the chemical industry is moderate, and the command and control gain is low, if any. I don't think people are going to be, in that case, like listening to chemical companies and doing what they say because of this. But nonetheless, there's a monetary incentive for them to go along with it because that panic encourages people to buy a lot of the products. And D, plastics. The industry, as with chemicals, is a direct beneficiary of the panic, but not a major pusher. Note the hard-fought progress after decades-long efforts of first-world environmentalists to reduce widespread reliance upon single-use plastics was reversed overnight because of lies. So you have a monetary incentive for the plastics industry, generally single-use, that would be increased with panicking the entire population in such a manner as what happened. And the command and control gain is pretty low on the plastics industry. Doesn't seem like they'd be the sorts of folks who, you know, who would be major drivers behind this. There's some monetary incentive because people are using their products, more takeout food, people using single use, lots of things because they see that as more sanitary. And of course you got the massive amount of masks that have been made. I don't see those who make masks as being, you know, some sort of pushers to this sort of thing, but rather that the panic being something that people who take advantage of these sort of psychological, large-scale social psychological swings can just make a product that people will end up buying, and that appears to be the case here. Gig economy, as I say, trash jobs of little security, clearly benefits when traditional employment drops. Few common people ultimately benefit. However, note how many people benefit is a valuable hard metric to analyze large-scale trends, depending on defining benefit, of course. Monetary incentive is very high, and the command and control gain is very high as well. So the gig economy is benefited by this, and how? So clearly you have things like you have ride sharing, you have Uber and Lyft and that sort of deal that it will generally appears to me that just on their part having a giant panic isn't necessarily going to help a whole lot, like increase their business, so to speak. I don't necessarily see it doing that on a psychological level. But what it does do is forces people out of traditional employment, and when that happens, the gig economy comes in to, you know, for the rescue, so to speak, such that I don't have my traditional small business anymore because they crushed and closed everything. All right, where can I get some employment? Even if you happen to have a car, okay, hop on to use Uber or Lyft or whatever, or in the case of delivering food, that's another huge thing that got increased through this virus panic. And so it reduces the benefit to employment, and there's some a fair amount of monetary incentive for those companies. And for those that had things like, you know, temp offices, that sort of deal, might have also been beneficial for them. I don't know. It depends. Command and control gain, that's pretty high on their level. I think I wrote very high on here, very high for most of them, or for both of them. That is to say, monetary incentive, command and control gain for the gig economy. I think that's actually a little bit lower. That's moderate gains, monetary incentive, and moderate command and control gain. Because if it forces people into that sort of employment, then they end up getting the gain on the command and control. It's still moderate, since it's that sort of economy, and those sort of companies are not so ubiquitous as the potential was some years ago. General industrial incentive for market share. The approach of corporations to make money exclusive of how, monopolistic tendencies encouraged, cycle of abuse made practically in business, big guys attacking the little guys given justification because virus, a trend that lends itself to potential exploitation, now clearly rotten fruit. So what this means is that how it is that a company gains market share is the active focus of this particular portion of this examination. And the approach of corporations to make money exclusive of how. So how one gains market share is the operating factor here. And if monopolies and others who have their if monopolies, big companies, and the friends that they have in public policy, the sort of marriage from hell of the public world, those we elect into positions, and that of the private world, the companies that we buy from, consume, and work for, when they work together on those in elected position to shut down small businesses and that sort of thing, if they're friends, then they end up getting the benefit. I think you can see the way that works, that the larger companies gain more market share if they can crush the smaller companies. Now, how do they crush the smaller companies? Lots of times, traditionally, it's always been that they either buy them out, or they make a cheaper product, or they do something else on a market level to increase their market share and to reduce that of their competitor. Now, this whole virus panic just completely circumvented any sort of necessary market shift or change in efficiency that would simply naturally lead to people going after a particular product put out by a large company. The large companies just with the government, the large companies just shut down and crushed all the smaller companies. It's just a completely freewheeling, the virus itself is the thinnest excuse for this sort of thing. It's clearly completely criminal, and just based on the collusion aspect itself, absolutely criminal that they've done this. And again, we're not going to forget. Command and control in general. Central planners may be benefiting from the attack in the short term. Some in government are true believers. Others have quieted their constitutional misgivings to go with the flow. This Mu Xin has unfortunately been hijacked by deceivers. Our government is special and has an extra responsibility to the world, as were liberty guides firstly. So the general move toward this command and control aspect of things is can be seen as a general shift through this virus panic that is irrespective of whether it's a private organization, a public one, or if it's groupthink amongst our society, that's irrespective of that put on by public officials or by private organizations, that sort of thing. The command and control, the want to authoritatively issue edicts that people follow, that's what I mean by that. Being able to, like, my ability to command and control is only so much as I can go out and tell people to do something and they'll do it. And similar to anyone else or any organization or whatever, if you can go out on a street corner and start telling people to do something and they do it, then you have high command and control. You have power, basically. And an because that's really all these organizations are ultimately gaining from this virus panic, is that they can go out and tell people to do something and they'll do it. And that's what that whole command and control thing is. And the idea, if you dumb people down to such a level that you destroy their logic centers and make them unable or unwilling to actually think for themselves, then you increase your command and control if you have a megaphone and a stage from which you can shout to them. And if there's some reason that they have to, especially if they have some reason to listen to what you have to say, say you're in some sort of traditional seat of power, you're a government official. In the case of Fauci, okay, he's where he is in the federal government. And so if he gets up there on a stage with a megaphone, he tells people to do this, there's going to be some people who listen to him. And increasing the panic amongst the population and giving them the rationale that this panic is based on this virus, then the command and control that he potentially has and that of organizations like, let's say, the CDC or the WHO or the local hospital administrator or the head of the city health office, their command and control increases greatly. So that is one of the incentives to go along with this virus panic plan that these corrupt actors and organizations piece together. And that's the sort of thing that our minds subconsciously calculate when looking at whether or not to follow along with this. So so somebody in the local health office of your city or the county, their minds on a subconscious level will run the calculations of, okay, do I follow along with this this virus panic nonsense and go ahead and run with it? Okay, what sort of benefit do I have? What benefit is going to come to me and what isn't? So if that person goes against it, they're going to be turned into pariah. They're going to lose their job. Who knows whatever else has happened because they're going against the, you know, prevailing flow of those presumably in power and who clearly have a lot of money to throw around and have connections on the highest level. And at the same time, do they gain benefit on a selfish level? So really, following along with this virus panic, if you're in any position of in the healthcare industry or in public health departments, if you follow along with this, you would have the benefit of gaining personal power because you can go out there and tell people what to do and they're more likely to follow what you say. Now, at the same time, in the long run, you're going to lose it because the people are lying when they do this. And you're deceiving the public and you're agreeing to a, you know, coordinated and collective lie. So eventually that's going to bring you down. But in the short term, you're going to have this, you know, sort of short-term gain where people are going to be believing you and you can tell them to do whatever. So that's something that actually would go on in the, that would go on in the subconscious processes of people's minds as they calculated whether or not to push against this or to go with the flow of it. Now, a lot of those subconscious operations that are going on don't necessarily take into account the temporal aspect of that of this grand lie. So they don't actually, the subconscious processes don't take into fact, that's, our minds don't necessarily go for that. They look at it in the moment or in the next week or month tops to think of the long term of like, oh, okay, this is a lie that's eventually going to come down after years is not the sort of thing that that their minds are calculating. So they're running calculations there subsurface, but they're not necessarily calculating to the level of which a rational mind, consciously aware, can really do. But the command and control aspect of it will show up on a short term, and I think in this case it did. So players and ideological groups. You have these players. I just mentioned a couple here, not in any order particularly, but I have A, China. The mask and pandemic impositions were begun in 2003 with SARS. China has been doing what we are experiencing now for nearly 20 years. They beta tested the tyranny on their own people in preparation for this very attack on the free world. So far as I can tell, looks like SARS back in 2003 was utilized as a manner of controlling people. And it was around then, if I'm not mistaken, that masks started showing up. Now, whether people were wearing it over there for the air pollution, this is what I always thought. It was like, okay, they're wearing it because the air pollution is so bad. Or if they're wearing it to keep away viruses. In any case, that's where these things start showing up, was in East Asia. And so you can see that there is a deep level of origination of this tyranny virus that China and East Asia was part and parcel to. And you also know that, again, how much do we hear from China and what's really going on there? It's very difficult for me to know. It's very difficult for the vast majority of the public to really know what's happening there, whether or not they really are as bad as they say, or if it's not that bad, or that sort of thing. But one thing to keep in mind when it comes to China and the sort of way in which the society operates on a social psychological level is to understand just what their government has done to their people and just how much oppression they have been under for however long. And the one thing that rings in my mind is their one child per family policy that they put through in, I think it was the mid-70s or perhaps late 60s. It was when Mao was around. And all you have to do is just imagine in your mind what sort of enforcement measures are necessary in order to make that happen. And then you can see just how authoritarian and how oppressive their government was, not only back then, but what it has, who knows where it's gone ever since. Because not only would the enforcement methods be inculcated and deeply embedded into the psychology of their people over the course of years, but that would lead also to any number of other abuses of individual rights that it can go with. I mean, you know, you would have to, in order to enforce that policy, you would have to have neighbors snitching on each other. You would have to, you know, have the government show up to people's houses and take their kids away. You would have to have the government force abortions on women. And it's absolutely tyrannical and horrific what would be needed in order to enforce that policy. And so far as I've heard, that's what's actually happened. They've done that to 1.5 billion people in their country. And when you do that, when you have something like that of such a high level of abuse and oppression, that's going to permeate out into everything. Every way that people act is going to be, that's going to be colored by it. And so you're not going to have things like freedom of speech. People aren't going to be, they're going to be policing themselves. And they will be very, very timid and docile because they allowed that to happen. Until the point where the people can't take it anymore and it gets to a level of oppression that that even the guardsmen or the people within that hierarchy of abuse, it gets to the level where they don't, they're abused just as bad and worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. It's a downward spiral circling the drain until there's some sort of mass catalyst that, you know, cracks that system into a million pieces, and you have a breakout of anarchy for however long that then eventually they will you know, piece back together into some sort of order. And you know, when that's going to be, I don't know, but that's the end result of this sort of thing. Regardless of what the rest of the world does, regardless of what our policy is toward them, or Russia's policy toward them, or some African country's policy toward them, that's just going to be the case. It's a temporary thing. And anyway, so much of that, what's happened here with the virus panic is that certain aspects of how the Chinese people treated their own people during that SARS, the first SARS outbreak back in 2003, is the sort of thing that was data that's been fed into the artificial intelligence to determine how to influence and impose a greater authoritarian response upon the free world that we've thus experienced. And so they were the beta test for that. Players. B, United States. Systemic corruption in leadership positions has been so prevalent that there was going to be very heavy compromises when the creditors came knocking, as they did in 2020. Conversely, the majority of the American people, through comforts and luxuries dependent upon compliance, have been fattened up for this since World War II. A lot to unpack there. The systemic corruption in leadership positions, this has been pretty clearly documented by a lot of those people the last couple decades, where we've noticed that the more money that is infused, more money is thrown at somebody's campaign, the more likely they're going to end up in their position, in their elected position. And this has been the case from local to state to federal elections. Is it, however, and the campaign contribution rules have been relaxed and relaxed and relaxed to the point where anybody can spend any amount of money for any candidate, so long as they have some sort of, you know, super PAC, a political action committee. And that itself is, it's a direct corruption. It really is. And then you have lobbying rules, which is basically legalized bribery. And so It's been very difficult for people who have principles and integrity to get into positions of leadership in our country without compromising those principles and integrity, without taking that that greasy, dirty money in order to get to their position. So this was, it was just kind of getting worse and worse over the decades. And we can see that that in 2020 the creditors came knocking, so to speak, for a lot of folks. And you can imagine whenever someone's running for whenever someone's running for office and they get $50,000 from, like, say, the telecommunication company lobby, then, you know, if they get elected, then they need to scratch the back of who gave them the money. And that sort of thing has been going on pretty well unabated for decades. And the end result of that is just a further corruption of the system and a further gaming and loss of principles and integrity amongst our leaders in a general sense. Now, on a case-by-case basis, you can look and be like, oh, well, you know, so-and-so got money from the pharmaceutical companies, but they didn't actually vote to benefit them in this way, that, or the other. But what you'd notice is that there's always something there's always a little bit of change based on who gives who the money, and who knows what sort of agreements were made when those contributions were given. But mainly that's the trend here, and they've been going on for some while. Conversely, majority of the American people, through comforts and luxuries dependent upon compliance, have been fattened up for this since World War II. You can see that in that we've really been served up on a silver platter all the good things, so many of the good material things in life have been laid at our feet. The convenience and astounding amount of prosperity, just in, say, like the food industry that we have access to, and also the amount of entertainment, that sort of thing, that so much of my generation particularly has been privy to and had access to. This is the sort of thing that that prior it inculcates that sense of compliance into you. It's that sense of biting. You don't want to bite the hand that feeds you because you might not get that food. You know, the fact that we have, you know, I can pick up my phone and call and have a pizza delivered is great. Someone bringing it right to my door. Now, if I start going against what I'm supposed to do on a obeying the quote authorities, maybe, you know, I won't be able to have someone won't be able to send me that pizza, or the phone won't go through, or something like that, the call won't go through. And so there's a subconscious push in our minds not to bite the hand that feeds us, because, you know, we'd like to get fed. And that has been used against us here in the States. Players, ideological groups. C, international corporations. The systems these companies exemplify do not necessarily hold loyalty to any nation nor to any people. The corruption that such systems allow would have brought forth something of this nature eventually, for legally binding monetary priorities, and now beyond to that of command and control itself. Each company has its own character and its own motivations. Besides the foundational similarities, machines, as the corporation is a human invention, require human control at the highest level, if for nothing other than ethical and moral and humane purposes. So, international corporations, since the Supreme Court and various decisions have said that corporations are people, you know, quote unquote, which clearly they're not. But that tendency to allow these large companies to operate of their own accord and against the laws that we have that are supposed to rein in organizations, them being exempt of these very things has allowed them to get to the level that they are, such that this international corporate coup got kicked off, because they wouldn't be pushing for this if they didn't have, you know, the ability to think that they could pull it off. And you look at something like big tech and pharmaceutical companies that are just running roughshod these days, and you wonder why that, you know, the top dog corporation, the federal government, isn't cracking down on them like it should. Hey, y'all are abusing people. How dare you do that? You know, you shouldn't be able to do that sort of thing. But they've gotten to such a level where there's an incredible amount of bribery going on, an incredible amount of power that they have, such that they're taking this time to attempt to, you know, basically take over. And they're not going to win, of course, but nonetheless, the corruption that they've wrought and their abuse of market forces, namely that of monetary incentive, has led to this sort of level. And you can see that the articles of incorporation for most companies, if I'm not mistaken, have to do with them basically, they have to make money. That's they're incorporated on that principle. And if the CEO isn't making money for the board, then the board can fire that CEO, bring in another one. Like, you need to make money. And the thing is, there's no real ethical limitations that are put upon those organizations. They don't have a Bill of Rights, for instance, that frames and restricts that organization in its, you know, operation directly, at least. If they're incorporated here in the States, then they need to operate under the laws of the United States of America, and they can't be abusing their people and denying them their freedom of speech or freedom of religion or freedom of assembly or bodily sovereignty or anything else. And against search and seizure, they can't be doing that. And we've allowed, because of our, I would say, our lack of vigilance, you might say, in enforcing the laws of laws, we've allowed these companies to get to a point where it's just like, oh, well, it's standard operating procedure to treat your employees like garbage. And because, you know, oh, everyone does it. Oh, it's whatever, you know, type of thing. But it's really absurd how that's gone through. And, you know, a reassertion of constitutional law is pretty vital on this front. Because if they're incorporated in the United States, they need to operate under these laws. Now, unfortunately, again, those laws of incorporation end up saying that you make money by whatever means, you know, or you have to make money, period. And if you don't, then, you know, they'll replace you and put in somebody who will. And this is something that actually I got to give credit to the Koch brothers, who brought in that a new definition of corporation, that you can incorporate in another manner and have a company that's not merely dedicated to making money, but also is constrained to constrained in the similar manner that our governments are, based on the Bill of Rights. But also, like, I forget exactly what the term was, the phrase was that they gave these corporations. But nonetheless, that's one option here, is that you can start a corporation that that isn't exclusively dedicated to making profit and revenue. And that's one of many tools in order for us to sort of adjust the way that we've been running our business such that this sort of thing doesn't happen again. Okay, so ideological groups. Communists. Ultimately, this whole virus panic is an attempted Chinese brand communist takeover. They started doing it with their own people, 2003 with SARS, and along with their friends in industry, media, etc., delivered the final product in 2020. That's kind of broad strokes on that, because it appears to me, too, that very little of this has anything to do with the economic ideology that communism would, ostensibly adheres to. This isn't nothing about what's going on now that's being imposed upon people is some sort of benefit for the working class. Nothing about it is about, the people getting their fair share of the benefits from an industrialized world. This is again clearly top level corporations and corrupt actors attempting to crush all the small people, all the people who aren't up to that level, and that's clearly unacceptable. But the communist aspect of this is what Mao and to a certain extent Stalin did by their attempts to destroy history and to rewrite history and to psychologically abuse an entire generation of people such that they would socially engineer them to become slaves, as opposed to any sort of like economic justification behind this, which there isn't any. And so the communist, the phrase or that word itself, I don't think accurately describes what's being attempted to be imposed upon us, because it has nothing to do with community, it has nothing to do with communing, very little to do with any sort of sharing of goods and resources, but it's everything to do with just an authoritarian top-down takeover. And the fact that communist regimes, quote-unquote, have utilized that word is really just abuse of it. They've used it as a vehicle to get what they wanted, which is really just more power for them and less for everyone else. But nonetheless, the term has been used as such, B, criminals. Clearly, being able to hide your face day in and day out benefits petty criminals and large criminal syndicates. Quote, the worst criminals aim to turn you into one. Yes, so this is a hierarchy of abuse. And again, to find the exact terminology, that's something that's coming along as well. It's not just me. Other folks are trying to figure this out too. So we need to describe this in a more accurate manner. Technocratic authoritarianism, or any number of other things, but something that happens with abusive authoritarian hierarchies is that the worst criminals aim to turn you into one. So the idea is that in order to cover the crimes of the top level criminals here, they want to turn everybody into a criminal. So you can see what was happening in the summer of 2020, and the total, it was absolutely brazen, the encouragement of violence and theft that the media was putting on people. I mean, it was absolutely, absolutely absurd how that they were encouraging people to go out and rob places and burn down and buildings and all that sort of thing. And it's not like they were encouraging people to express their grievances toward those who are actually causing them harm, but they're encouraging them to attack each other and their neighbors and their communities and all that sort of thing, and saying that it's all perfectly fine. And of course, by slapping on a face mask on everyone, the idea was that people would be so free from the consequences of their actions that they would feel fine just running around and looting and robbing and in some cases murdering. And fortunately, it didn't work. but that really is the worst criminals aim to turn you into one. That really is an axiom that plays out all across the entire world and throughout eras. It really is. That's something to remember and to be aware of and to be vigilant of, is that, in the same way that misery likes company, really, the worst criminals, in order for them to, these criminal empires, for them to have an empire, is to encourage criminality in other people. And the best liars are the ones that benefit from there being a paradigm of everybody lying to each other. Because, if everybody lies, then the best liars end up being in the highest positions. That's just how these things sort of go. It's a logical and deductive and mathematical analysis and approach to these sorts of things. So in a similar manner, when criminality becomes the norm, then criminals benefit. And the more people that they can turn into criminals is the more likely it becomes the norm and the more they benefit, and, on and on and on. So, population controllers. There may yet be powerful people who are true believers here. Something to be aware of if such may or may not be confirmed. The test will be whether women vaccinated with these new concoctions can safely deliver children. So this one of the side things behind this is, it appears, and many people have talked about this as well, is the depopulation agenda, and how the vaccine, quote-unquote, has to do with that might very well be it being a sterilizing agent. And the idea was to get this into as many people as possible, such that turns out that it, sterilizes you or wrecks your immune system or does any number of other things. I think the most likely negative side effect, intentional negative side effect of this, is sterilization. If this being a part of a depopulation agenda, which I think it is, at least to a certain extent. And so we'll see. We'll see what happens with the folks who took the vaccine and whether they can have kids. Ideological groups, de-environmentalists. Some saw benefit in lockdowns, such as only temporary, if ever a good thing. Presuppositions behind much of the messaging of climate change have been deceptive, with vital metrics left out of the equation. So the environmental aspect of this, that goes back to what I was talking about earlier, with globalists polluting with globalism, claim globalism the solution to pollution. So the having a concentration of product and in places that are on the other side of the world, such that an international trade is necessary just to get like basic goods, that doesn't make any sense on an efficient front. So we end up wasting a whole lot of our precious non-renewable resources and just running around on a merry-go-round in a carnival. And so if we don't utilize those resources in order to make sure that we have a sustainable future, i.e. utilize our limited fossil fuels in order to create sustainable energy grid and ability for transportation industry and that sort of thing. Eventually, we're going to hit a wall. It's going to be pretty ugly. And environmentalists concerned, especially with pollution, can, again, look to the fact that the international level of international trade that we have is quite unsustainable, and it's simply inefficient when it comes to trading basic goods from one place to another. I mean, there's no reason for us to be sending over pigs over to China, because China can just as soon grow their own hogs. They can grow hogs over there, or we can grow hogs over here, and so we can both have plenty of hogs. We can have plenty of bacon and pork chops and ham that we like. There's no reason for us to ship over something so fundamental that can be made just as well over there. In similar manner with other things like chicken and with beef. It doesn't make any sense from an efficiency standpoint to do so. And so the pollution that comes out as a result of that is completely unnecessary. Now, there's necessarily going to be a fair amount of pollution in an industrialized society for a certain time period until we get to a sustainable energy system that doesn't use non-renewable resources. But we're not there yet. And what it is that we need to alter in that system in order for us to have a fully renewable electric grid and transportation sector and all that sort of deal, these have yet to come about. But they're not going to come about through authoritarian top-down measures. If you do that sort of thing, we're going to be living in a hell for however long, and it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how green, you know, that hell is. If it's hell, it's hell. If we're not free to go about where we want to, or associate with who we would like, say what we would like, do what we want, that sort of thing. I mean, there's no point for us to live to give justification to this industrial world and perpetuation of life that we have if we don't have that freedom. So that's something to keep in mind, that if we stop all of our living in order to protect the environment, then we're stopping all of our living. The environment, if we don't, we still need to live, rather than being getting rid of ourselves. I mean, that's where that sort of psychology ends up going. It makes people hate themselves, which is not helpful at all. That goes back to a new economic, which is really a much better way to rearrange our limited resources such that people can go and work as much as they would like to, or as little as they would like to, because all they'd really need to go out and spend money on is food, water, and electricity. Because if they have their own place, and you have a room of one's own, as Virginia Woolf called it, it's much less needed that you work so hard just in order to pay for the roof over your head. And in such a manner, we organically bring down our overconsumption to a level that we all choose. So that's the benefit behind environmentally behind a new economic. And so it's unnecessary to, if for those at the top level of global policy, national policy, that sort of thing, who are looking at the imposition of tyranny through this virus as the answer to those environmentalist issues and our non-renewable resource expenditure and overconsumption issues, they should know that there's a better way, and it's a new economic. So anyway, moving on. Some tangentially related issues here, and these are what I call psychosocial aggregations. These are negative psychological and social axioms that I've noticed throughout the people I've talked to these last couple decades that are self-perpetuating prophecies that only end up in bad news for everyone when they are perpetuated. So people who say these sorts of things and then someone else hears it and they're like, oh, okay, well, I'll say that too. And eventually what happens is that you end up, it turns out bad because so much of how we treat each other is based on our collective psychological image of each other, we alter that image by way of speaking and making observations about the world. And if those observations, when they can be self-fulfilling prophecies, you can alter society in such a manner that that's not helpful, and that isn't necessarily wrong, but isn't necessarily right either. Anyway, so I'll go into them here. Corruption. This is well documented in our leadership, campaign contributions, legalized bribery, pay to play, etc. The list goes on. Clearly, corrupting that which is entrusted to prevent corruption, e.g., legal and political systems, is problematic. So corruption itself is a self-perpetuating psychosocial aggregation. When you have legalized bribery and campaign contributions of any number of level that can be paid astronomical amounts of money, and you have the stuff that they're talking about now, that like Zuckerberg was paying directly to Democratic districts in order to make sure that they brought out more people to vote. I mean, it's really, this has gotten to levels of corruption that, again, it self-perpetuates. If you don't put a stop to it, if you don't put your foot down and be like, no, we can't have this level of corruption, eventually it's going to seed itself and permeate itself into the systems that we've created that are there to stop that corruption. And then once it does that, then it's going to, it becomes even more and more a part of our society. So corruption itself is a psychosocial aggregation that creates a self-fulfilling prophecy. So you need to stop it. You need to nip it in the bud and put your foot down and say no more. No, we're not having this. We're not having it, that sort of thing. So deception. Deception often begets deception. If one is not careful to remain honest and sincere, it aggregates until it causes such harm that it implodes on itself. Best to give it a wide berth so the Decepticons attack each other within their tangled webs. Lying, when it is given free rein and we don't call it for what it is and shun people who lie and deceive each other, what we witness is lying and deception becoming the modus operandi of our society. And what happens when that happens? Well, we're witnessing it. This is what happens when lying and deception just become the way of the world. When we don't call it out and we allow people who lie and deceive each other to get vastly rich and to continue to lie and deceive, when those are the means by which they utilize to get to that next level, they're going to perpetuate that, and it's going to be utilized further. And like, for instance, you look at what Fauci did, and the fact that as RFK Jr. said, that what he was doing doing in this pandemic is part of a well-worn, dog-eared playbook that he'd done in the past with pharmaceutical companies to bring in vaccines and unnecessary medical procedures just in order to gain money for more of the industry. Since those were allowed to go through, nothing happened to him. Everybody got rich who used these deceptions, who abused people in these clinical trials, who abused their position in science in order to, you know, doctor the numbers and then say that something, you know, some exclusive chemical they have a patent on is some sort of miracle treatment when it wasn't. And, you know, multiple times they've done this over and over where they basically they bought off the scientific aspect of this and just bribed people to get this thing pushed through and approved by the FDA. And then it went through and it went out to a bunch of people and they made a bunch of money. Fair amount of people got hurt. There was no prison time. There was no change in what happened. Then it was just going to happen worse the next time. They were going to do it again. And clearly they did, you know. And so if you don't stop these deceptions at a certain level, and when people end up getting that much more, you know, powerful, when they make all that money and our regulatory arms of the government don't stop them and end up being, in the case of the pharmaceutical industry, they end up being, you know, more so part of that money-making corporate world, it's just going to get worse and worse. It's going to get worse and worse and worse and worse until it gets to a point that we have it here, what we're witnessing. And that is it's clear that that's been going on in many other industries as well. It's a similar thing. Like, you have to stop these things at some point. I mean, leading up to this, I've heard report after report after report after report in so many different industries and so many different departments of what they call regulatory capture, where our regulatory apparatuses end up getting bought out by the industries they're supposed to regulate. And what happens with that is, one day it's just, there's a little bit of corruption here. They fudged a couple numbers and they made a bunch of money, screwed over a bunch of people, and who cares? Or in the case of a couple years later, it happens again, and it's worse this time, and it happens again, and it's worse. And in the case of, you look at the 2008 financial crisis, and it's like nobody went to jail for this, except for a couple of, clear grifters who were just running pyramid schemes. But the big banks and the major players who had hands in passing around, these toxic securities, and then got caught, whoever got caught in the game of hot potato ended up getting, you know, falling down. And millions upon millions upon millions of people were thrown out of their houses, and a whole lot of businesses got crushed that didn't need to, and, you know, and on and on and on. Again, when nobody went to jail for any of that stuff, the only end that is going to lead to is to a worse crash and to a more abusive event. And here we are, you know. And I was arguing for all this, and, you know, till I was blue in the face to everybody I could possibly, you know, catch an ear for, and warning them about this. We cannot continue to allow this to happen. On and on and on. This is what happened. That's what happened. I just thought, oh yeah, well, not enough people know about this. So if we warn them all, you know, it'll hopefully turn this around. But this corruption has been so deeply embedded into our system that, clearly got really ugly here. But looks like we're turning it around, which is important. Okay, so that was deception, psychosocial aggregations. Malicious axioms, cyclical self-fulfilling prophecies employed by negative cultures. A, nobody cares.
When this axiom is granted and perpetuated, a self-fulfilling prophecy ensues, ensuring that such becomes true amongst the culture that retains it. So look around and see and listen to who is perpetuating this, that phrase, that axiom. Nobody cares. And what you'll find is a negative subculture that basically just wants that to be the case. Now, when that is the case, again, who benefits from that? Well, it's the people who really don't care. That's who benefits. When you say that, you perpetuate it. So don't perpetuate it, and be a person who actually does care. And we can stop this, and we can be a caring society, and we can have love for people and harmony. But you have to hear something like that, and you need to buck the trend. If that's the trend, and if that's accurate, then we need to stand up against it and buck that trend. B, there's nothing you can do. Again, self-fulfilling negative prophecy cycle perpetuates a cycle of abuse until the pushback inevitably occurs. So, again, same sort of thing. If that's true, then buck that trend and actually do something about it. And if it isn't true, then don't perpetuate it. Clearly it's not true, because there is always something that we can do in our lives to make a better world for ourselves and others. There is always something we can do. Always. Everybody has the ability to, first off, to stand up for themselves and not be abused. That's number one thing. Have some self-respect and don't allow yourself to be abused. Number one. Everybody can do that. And then other things that we can do actively to encourage that in others, and what we can do that's beneficial in our own lives is, you know, these are as various as we all are unique. And every one of us has in our own lives individual things that we can do that can help. So, C, picks or it didn't happen. This one creates a world where things don't happen in the real world, but only in the digital, which is clearly controlled, managed, and in many cases weaponized against the people. This degrades reality. Disturbing trends of believing random internet things over people or your own senses. The continuing rise of picture and video manipulation, deepfakes, is a dangerous trend as well. So this is the Pixar didn't happen type of thing. Again, this goes back to the digital takeover of the real world. So the intent is for those who have the centralized control of our digital communication systems to create those digital communication systems to be more of a reality than our actual reality. Now, I've seen this in so much of my interactions with folks over the years, over decades, in that one of the big things that I noticed is that I would be telling someone a story, and I'll be saying, oh yeah, this, that, and the other, and I saw this, and I saw that, and this is what happened. And then I'd get them, they would rebuff that. They'll be like, no, well, that can't have happened because of X, Y, or Z. And I'd be like, okay, well, did you see it? Were you there? Like, no, but that's because I read that, blah, blah, blah. And that's the thing that's really bizarre here, is that I'm a real person here, in real life, talking to someone else in real life, and telling them what I saw, and they would rather believe some random thing on the internet that they read that day than they would believe the person that's literally telling them right to their face, that's explaining this. And, you know, they actually, and it's not like these are often enough friends of mine who are quite aware that I'm someone who is to be believed, that I don't lie about my experiences or something that I've seen. Or something that happened in my life, that I am a trusting source for this sort of thing. And they would nonetheless disregard what it is that I would say because they read something on the internet, perhaps in a meme somewhere. And this speaks to the very bizarre manner in which our digital world has taken over the logic centers of our minds, such that people would more so believe somebody on TV who has lied to them night after night after night for a decade over their own neighbor who came to them and, you know, and told them something that that refutes what was said on the TV. So that's what Pixar didn't happen. It can be kind of a funny thing, and this is indicative of the strange trend for people to believe things that they read online, or to believe the words of verified liars who have megaphones, as opposed to those who are confirmed truth tellers. And so it's odd. D, everyone lies. The only people that benefit from this cyclical and cynical axiom are the ones perpetuating it, i.e., the worst and most practiced liars among us. Continued, this ends badly, hence why it is such a sin to bear false witness. Yes, so I've heard people say this over and over and over again for, again, decades. It is regularly brought up. It was, I should say, regularly mentioned at the tail end of just about any discussion of corruption or politics or economics, and that would show up, and they're like, "Oh, well, everyone lies." And it's like, "No, no, they don't." And by the way, for you to perpetuate that very thing is what makes that world even more possible. And so, it ends up in a world where the only people benefiting from it are the people who benefit the most from it are the most practiced liars. And those most practiced liars teach on those lies to the rest of society, and everyone becomes a liar. And it just, this is, again, that's that, it's, that indemnifies, and it's the epitome of what I like to call a negative psychosocial aggregation. So it works like this. If everyone is, then everyone gets treated like they are. Then more regulations to keep people honest, and more people get involved to police such. More police beget more infringements on liberty, and on until everyone is either the prisoner or the guard, or both, eventually. In a spiritual sense, for one to be both prisoner and guard is not necessarily a bad thing, as a free society requires self-governance of its own citizens. Thus, when that is the case, less policing is necessary. This gets into more of a sense that, I said it right there, that that we police ourselves best when we are self-governing individuals, i.e., we are capable of, you know, not stealing from our neighbor, even though they have something nice. We, you know, help to make a better civil society around ourselves. And that's important. It really is. Because otherwise, you know, we wouldn't be able to have nice things unless there was, you know, unless there was, like, you know, police everywhere. If people would just go out and steal whatever it is that they saw was nice. And the fact that we don't is what you call progress. Miscellaneous notes. A note on oil pipelines. This is kind of dated. Much of what can be called peacetime activism that I have engaged in and called for in the past can take a backseat for a while. Environmental activism in particular is clearly subordinate to dealing with the shots fired of this war, as shown hereon. I explicitly mention this because I was vocally opposed to a few pipelines for valid environmental reasons. Respect for water resources is super important still and is a vital deterrent. However, our present circumstances have made pipeline shutdowns or sabotage acts of war. When a computer network that controls them is built right, pipelines, like other vital infrastructure, should not even be hackable, nor should they ever purely rely on computer control anyway. That they could mean that a network was designed to be exploited. Concerning the, that has to do with the oil pipeline that that got hacked in, I think it was North Carolina. This is back last spring. Concerning the 2020 election, clearly this scenario is tied in with the shenanigans in our last election, to put it mildly. Crises back to back, along with other problems to come. Likely many of the same bad actors are involved. About the title for this series, I originally chose the phrase The Great Awakening because it seemed appropriate to the level of paradigm shift that would occur following the propositions in A New Economic. It was after my initial release in the fall of 2019 that I investigated the Q-verse, so to speak, and found that the phrase was often used there. There is a lot of nonsense in this subculture and some truth. Confirm what on the ground before taking strong action, like with other potentially specious stories. It should be said as well that portions of the QAnon movement have been excessively attacking cultural institutions that are in some cases strongly American and which we ought to be proud of on a broad level. Few groups and industries have not had their reckoning already or soon will. Hollywood in particular is a national treasure, ultimately, like our universities and elsewise. The phrase, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, comes to mind here. And again, that phrase, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, is pretty important, not just for those industries, but for other ones as well. Because all these industries that I've mentioned that have had a hand in all of this, it's not necessarily the smartest way to do things to break them down and destroy them, and then, you know, build something up fresh. But there are better ways to go about this. And namely, one of the big things is to, this is a revolution of the mind. This is a change in the shift in our, how we view the world and how we view ourselves that is, you know, the biggest change and biggest benefit that we can make here, or at least that I can make, certainly, for my position and what I can offer as a thinker and somebody who's trying to come up with solutions here, ways in which we can get ourselves out of this. And as far as I see it, so much of the negative aspects of this our society at present, that all of them were brought to a T and every one of them was utilized in this virus panic in order to bring us down and to impose this new type of slavery on the free world. And so much of that came about as a result of psychological conditioning and deception and lies and all that sort of thing. We didn't get to this sort of position where people would slap masks on their faces and cower in their houses and stay 6 feet away from each other and not go to certain stores and only leave, when their master says so. We wouldn't have gotten to this position if people weren't buttered up with some great conditioning, psychological conditioning and emotional conditioning prior. So, because otherwise people just wouldn't listen to them. I mean, why would you listen to that person who says that on the TV or on the radio or whatever? Why would you even listen to them? For what? What purpose? How does this help you? It's clearly based on the senses of the person you know, of their real world, what they can see, there's nothing amongst their own sensory reality that confirms what these liars and, you know, deceivers are saying. So there's no reason to necessarily believe them. Now, why is it that so many people believe them? Because in a fresh world where people haven't been buttered up to do this, nobody would believe that at all. Very few, at the very least. Certainly not, you know, huge swaths of society. And so them believing these lies shows that we can turn it around through a, you know, bringing out the truth, basically. That really is a revolution of the mind that is the answer to this. And so that can be done. And here, a note on conspiracy theories. Clearly, the broad strokes of the warnings of so-called fringe conspiracy theorists these last decades were accurate. The only real conspiracy necessary here for this virus panic to have the desired effect, as shown above, and that of any future crying wolf pandemic, is that of coordinated lying and censorship by a few prominent people, with as much plausible deniability as possible, of course. The operative metrics for whether this could be successful, and that of others, is the consistency of the lies, the reach of the megaphones, the confidence of the public, how well they have been trained in deception, tendency toward petty tyranny, control of media, the reach of real-world threats, and, of course, the public submissiveness quotient. And you have compromised media quotient. This is syndicate control of media, percentage of megaphones in radio, television, and social media, reach of that control, how many people each broadcast affects, diluted with each layer of secondary repetition, and consistency of the lies, which would be absorption factor. And public submissiveness quotient is the public confidence in media, percentage of people who accept deception, tendency toward petty tyranny, percentage of people who utilize deception, and reach of real-world threats, strong-arm tactics to increase both percentages. So these are really the only conspiracy theories necessary is a certain very select, very small group of people who agreed on a set of lies. And that's it. Now, this small group of people are the ones who pay people to say whatever it is that they want them to say on radio and television and in newspapers. And that's been clear for some while. If you have enough money, you can get just about anyone to say anything on so many of the quote-unquote news stations or newspapers or whatnot. You got enough money, you can tell people, you can get anybody to say just about anything. So that's been used against us. And so really, it's just certain subgroup of people who agreed to a set of lies and just perpetuated them. That's really it. And after that, groupthink would take over, and a whole bunch of people who were sincere would try to be like, oh, okay, well, you know, what's the rationale for these lies? We're told that this is the case. Well, the only way that can be the case is if this is the case. And if that's the case, then we need to do this for this and that and this and the other. And so there's plenty of people in the depths of all this who could very well have been operating in a sincere manner and yet still perpetuated the tyranny itself. That is the chart up to the solutions box. And we will get to that here quite shortly after we take a short break. Don't go away.